The most important lesson that one can learn from life is not that there is pain in this world, but that it is possible for oneself to transmute it into joy. A quote by Rabindranath Tagore, a revered polymath of India, a poet, philosopher, musician, and artist whose work continues to inspire and resonate with people around the world. Hello, my name is Malati, and I am your host on the show titled The Impressive Empress, where we celebrate and amplify the voices of women, providing insightful conversations, stories, and inspiration to help many women and girls embrace their power, purpose, and potential in all aspects of life. Today, I'm so happy to be talking to yet another lady who has created a huge impact in this world through her amazing work. It gives me immense pleasure to talk to these women leaders, discussing their struggles, challenges, leadership, and celebrations. Clearly, the idea behind this show is to understand what it takes for a woman to become a leader, to understand the journey from within, the journey to becoming a female leader with a higher purpose. Our guest for the day is Dr. Geeta Manjunath, the visionary founder of Niramai, a groundbreaking healthcare startup revolutionizing breast cancer detection. Niramai is a novel software-based medical device to detect breast cancer at a much earlier stage than traditional methods of self-examination. Under Geeta's leadership, Niramai has achieved significant recognition and acclaim. Their pioneering work has garnered prestigious awards such as the Aegis Graham Bell Award, the BRAX Women Entrepreneurship Award, and the BRAX National Bio Entrepreneurship Competition. Geeta was declared the winner of Women Health Innovation Showcase Asia, Accenture Vahini Innovator of the Year Award from Economic Times, and Women Entrepreneur of the Year 2020 by Biospectrum India. Geeta is also an inventor of 20 US patents and more pending grant. Her leadership inspires innovation, while her visionary thinking anticipates trends and opportunities. Resilience drives her through challenges, and effective communication fosters strong relationships with stakeholders. Empathy fuels her patient-centric approach, ensuring compassionate healthcare solutions. Collaboration enhances Niramai's teamwork and problem-solving capabilities. Dr. Manjunath's unique blend of these soft skills has propelled Niramai to the forefront of breast cancer detection innovation, making a profound impact in healthcare. I'm extremely happy to have Geeta on the show, talking to me about change, challenge, and celebration. A very good afternoon, Dr. Geeta Manjunath. I'm so happy to see you and say hello to you through our podcast, The Impressive Empress, where I talk to women leaders from various fields, from various walks of life, living across the globe, trying to understand their inner journey to becoming a successful leader. So, welcome to our show.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Malati. Thank you so much for running our story on your podcast.
Thank you. It's an honor, to be very honest, to be talking to you and understanding what it takes to drive something like Niramai. Can you briefly introduce yourself, Geeta?
Sure. I'm Geeta Manjunath, founder and CEO of a startup called Niramai Health Analytics. Here we develop a new method of detecting breast cancer in a completely privacy-aware manner, goes accurate in women of all age groups, and where nobody sees or touches the person. So this is sort of where we've been on a mission to save lives from breast cancer. Going to my background, I'm basically a techie turned entrepreneur. I did my PhD in computer science from Indian Institute of Science, and did my management education from Kellogg's Chicago, thanks to my sponsors and companies that I've worked for. So I've been like a corporate person for a while. I started my journey as a young engineer in CDAC, Center for Development of Advanced Computing, which was the first research group in India, trying to develop the first supercomputer from India. So I was there for 6 years, and then I joined as a first member of Hewlett Packard Labs in India to work very closely with my US colleagues and learn a lot from them. And then I was basically a principal scientist and department manager, working on several interesting problems that technology can solve and can solve in the future. Then I went on to head artificial intelligence research for Xerox, working out of India. And there again, I was pretty happy working with a bunch of very, very smart PhDs, trying to understand what they are saying, proposing new ideas myself, and trying to make that get into business and run on the ground as a techno manager, managerial person. And lab director, I was heading many AI projects, almost 25 other projects in different areas, including healthcare, smart cities, as we call it, customer care and education. And some turn of events made me just quit my job and start Nirmay. So now I'm the founder, CEO, CTO of Nirmay Health Analytics, which is now 6 years old. Internationally, more of a nationalist, I would say. So, of course, I've traveled very, very heavily, multiple times, almost at least 2 to 3 times every year outside the country, mostly to the US and Europe, and traveled almost all continents and presented there. So, motivation and experience has always been trying to show that Indians can also do research and do research as at the same quality as international researchers. So whenever I go and present in international forums, I feel I'm representing India. So yes, I have been in India and of course worked very wonderfully with colleagues all over the world, particularly from California and Webster Grenoble.
That's a wonderful statement coming from you, Geeta, that Indians can really bring out excellent quality of work of international standards. That's great. So can you tell me the idea, something about the idea for how Nirmay was born?
Yeah, sure. Like I was talking about, I was a lab director at Xerox Research. I had a wonderful time working with my team, trying to innovate for the world. Xerox is a very open company, very wonderful, managers and senior management, trying to sort of also work with business groups to try and bring in innovation in their groups and so on. Around that time, one of my cousin sisters, Bharti, got detected with breast cancer. She was 42 years of age, and I really saw how breast cancer and late incidences of breast cancer can really change the family. Both, of course, it's an emotional toil, because within a year she could not survive beyond a year because of late detection, and the family was shattered, and she was more a close friend than a sister, really. So I also was very much taken aback from this sudden disappearance. And obviously, it affected the family economically as well. So that actually made me start working in the direction of trying to understand breast cancer and trying to see what I can do in that direction of detection of breast cancer early. And as luck would have it, within 6 months, one other family member on my husband's side got detected with breast cancer. She was 38 years, Lakshmi. And this was a double blow on me. And I was very, very internally sort of, urging to do something about this, not just be sort of sad. And of course, I was very, very sad and pained, and every day I used to get both of these faces in front of me, and there two sons each, one each. So that is what triggered. I started reading up about breast cancer, figuring out what are the gaps, and started a small exploratory project as well using my exploratory budget. And after about 10 months to 1 year, I decided I will do this full time, along with a couple of team members who are working with me, in that they decided to join me. I proposed, and after about a year, I quit. And it's been a very, very fulfilling journey, I would say. A lot of learnings on the ground. And I'm happy to share that now we definitely have created a breakthrough in breast cancer screening, which can detect cancer early, much before a hand can feel a lump. Much, much more affordable, accessible, portable, and also works on younger women. And now it is also, we have approvals from Europe, other Southeast Asian country, of course, India. And also we have a device approved in the US as well. So it's been a very learning and fulfilling journey so far. Of course, more to go.
So that's a very emotional journey, so to say. Of course, losing someone near and dear is definitely not a comfortable position, to say the least. It's a very sad state. But what prompted you to actually, you know, I know you've been in the field of, you've been working in the field of AI and healthcare and things like that. But what is it that went through your mind at the time when you wanted to do something, something different for, you know, early screening of breast cancer?
Right. So basically, as a researcher, you know, I had almost like 20 years of a career where all I wanted to do is solve new problems, trying to address important, impactful problems, and do it in a way that is different from what's done before, because you know, doing the same thing over and over again will only give you the same result. So when I got this thought that, you know, can I do something in this area? First thing, of course, was to learn about, because it was very new subject to me. I had not seen anyone else affected with breast cancer till then. With that, I started reading up about breast cancer. I started discussing with my friends and colleagues in the imaging industry or imaging groups to try and see what is done today and how are there any other imaging modalities that can be used and so on. So really, the first step was to understand what is out there, to even see whether I can contribute at all, right? You know, one is to have a thought process, and is there something concrete that I can do in this space? So first and foremost, I think this understanding of the first, the gap in the current system and how one can contribute, that itself takes quite some time of multiple rounds of discussions, and nobody will come and say, okay, this is the thing, go and do it. It'll just sort of crystallize based on multiple discussions, right? So that is what I was mainly focused on. Of course, I didn't even know that I'll be starting a startup or anything. It was just, I want to know more and can I help the situation? That was all was in my, and mostly I was thinking more like I will do it in my spare time, spend it on this and things like that. So then one of my colleagues from Palo Alto, Webster basically mentioned El Chemista about thermal imaging. And he said he had a thermal camera also, and we can experiment. So I thought it was interesting. So I went to him. I went with him actually to Manipal Hospital, KMC Hospital in Manipal, Udupi, and Karnataka Bank in India. And so he discussed with the doctor, and they allowed us to do thermal imaging of two patients who were actually going for surgery next day. So that started my journey towards thermal breast screening. So I remember that hotel room where we both were discussing, looking at the images and also, you know, turning the laptops towards the wall so that, you know, nobody will see that. So because at that time it was like, really, what is that you're staring at? And So this guy, I mean, I looked at it and said, yeah, we can write an imaging algorithm to detect some of the red spots out here. Maybe that is where it is. We were not sure whether that is where the cancer is. We asked the doctor, he said, yes, that is the space. And then he said, okay, two subjects are not sufficient. We have to do more. Then set up a formal collaboration with the hospital to quote-unquote, collect more data about the feasibility. So we had about 78 cancer patients screened with the imaging because our thermal imaging was completely non-contact, safe, radiation-free. It's not going to add any issue, but they were kind enough. Those cancer patients were kind enough to give the consent for taking their images before their surgery. So that gave us some additional information to see whether it's feasible to actually detect abnormalities in these people. Whether it's cancer or not is another bigger question. So then I actually formed a team. One more person added into it, and guiding her and the other rest of the team members to actually sort of localize. You know, looking at a cancer patient image, can we mark where the likely cancer is, and then we go and ask the doctor, is this where it is? So, you know, this kind of a validation, because when you're in a new path, for your mind only, you need to have confidence in the approach you're taking before you actually even quote-unquote sell it to somebody else, right? So that confidence building in what we are doing was very, very important. Then I said, okay, what is the use of screening women who are already going for breast cancer? Surgery? So can I, why can't we do it on women who are normal looking? So that's when it will be really useful. So because I was here and Ulipi is quite far from in Bangalore, so we had to find somebody in that hospital who will come in. And so initially it was difficult. And then we asked the person who's taking the images. She said, okay. So she swapped, and she and her mother were the first two normal women who screened. So that gave us a further insight as to what could be a potential direction of the software or the algorithms that we will write to go in that direction. Then I set up a formal, looked up who else is doing it, set up a formal collaboration to actually collect more data about benign, malignant and normal patients. And then the journey started. So we had one more collaboration with HCG. So like this, you know, every bit of data that we had to collect and increase the confidence in our own algorithms. Of course, first time we got 78% accuracy. And so it means going back to the lab and trying to see how we can improve it, what kind of innovative methods we can use to improve and so on. So at that time, though, I was like not required to write code. For this, I have written code as well, trying to sort of, you know, run this on my own, try to understand how far this can go and so on. After that, I put up a proposal to quit and take this out of the lab, you know. So that is how the whole journey started.
Mm-hmm. Very, very interesting. I'm really glad that you took the step and you stayed on course to actually dig a lot deeper into the whole subject and come up with this wonderful thermal analytical solution.
Thank you.
I know the difficulties that are associated with mammogram, and I've personally experienced that. But, you know, it is one thing for you to decide that, this is the direction I have to go in and this will work. You know, something inside you must have kept telling you that this is going to work. But it's totally different to convince the people around you. Now, the change that you were trying to bring in, instead of mammogram, you wanted to suggest a thermal analytical or a thermal imaging process. This needs to be dealt with rationally and emotionally. How did you manage that?
I think it was more emotional than rational, mm-hmm. right? Clearly, quitting a job with where actually, as luck would have it, I was told that I'll be heading the full center next, you know, because my manager was moving on. So that was a time where I had to say no, I was just going to jump off. But one thing was very clear in my mind that making an impact was bigger than money. So at that time, it was very, very clear to me that my decision would be in this direction. To the extent that I remember talking to some of my friends and senior, like very close friends in the office as well, You know, I was giving this analogy to her. You know, she's now part of Niramaya as well. So that, you know, when I'm dying on my deathbed, if I want to relook at my whole life and then say, was there a decision I would have done differently? Was there a decision I would have regretted? Then clearly I told, okay, Shireen, if I now take the decision to stay back and become the head of the center and leave this opportunity to make a difference in somebody's life, not that I will, but an opportunity, I will definitely regret that decision later. That itself, that just visualization of that itself is sufficient for me to not move. Of course, I'm very thankful for my family members who supported me in this, because it's not easy to just sort of say yes to such a quick decision. But they know me, like, you know, I they know that, you know, throughout my life I've tried to sort of hopefully, you know, be kind to others, and they know that I get more satisfaction in these kind of activities. So it was not a surprise. But only thing I told myself and told my family as well is I'm going to try for 2 years, right? You know, if I don't know what I can do, but if I don't know, if I don't take this action, this idea that we are working on will just be squashed. You know, that was the situation in the company at that time. I had to close down that project, and that's one of the reasons why I had to kind of take this out. And then, so nobody else will do it if I'm not doing it. That's the kind of, you know, magnanimous feeling I got. And I told this, you know, so I'm going to try for 2 years. If nothing happens, I'll go join another job. And I'm sure, you know, qualified enough to get other opportunities. So this is what I, you know, I said and I asked for help and support around me. And they've been very, very cooperative now. They're very proud of what together we've been able to achieve and so on. So, and then I asked a couple of my team members, you know, if you are willing to come, obviously only then I'll be able to do, because, you know, it's really not about one person just deciding. It also needs a team to build. And Shivan, Himanshu, they were the techie people who were working with me. And they said, yeah, if you are starting, we'll come. So three of us decided to quit. One of my team members, Nidhi, she had an MBA from IIM. So I also discussed with her to help out on the marketing and business development front. She said, yeah, sure. And then, so three of us and then me, we quit and then started Niramaya. Now, of course, Nidhi is not anymore with us. After 2 years, she quit. But we have Himanshu and Shiva continuing to be with the company and helping out on the tech side right now.
That's a lovely journey. I mean, it's serendipity maybe in action there. But were there any barriers that you had per se, internal, external, that you had to face in bringing about the product, the final product that is now available in the market?
Absolutely. There are lots of transactional barriers. Every day you can think of it like a barrier or a challenge or an opportunity to go to the next level, right? So it's really about not looking at what is coming and obstructing in front of you, but seeing through it and going to the next, you know, realizing that once you cross this barrier, what's the nice thing that you can see? This real optimism is absolutely critical, absolutely important in this. Because there's so many things why we cannot do this. You know, I mean, you don't even have to list it. You know, on the day one, I knew like, the first thing I didn't do was to list any of them, right? Why, what I don't know, what I can't do. Obviously, there are many. Nobody is like knowing everything, you know. Entrepreneurship and running a business requires a lot of skills and a lot of different types of activities. But what I was willing to do is roll up the sleeves and do what it takes to do it. That's all, right? You know, so once you are in that mindset, obstacles becomes, you know, known unknowns that you need to sort, right? You know, so more unknowns, you know, it's much easier to solve and get onto the challenge. That's how I usually make that. What I don't know about this sometimes, not as barriers to say, what all should I get clarified? And then try to figure out whom should I ask this? You know, this is a more positive thinking about barriers and obstructions rather than, you know, okay, it's going to be a barrier. I never consider them as barriers, really, about what needs to be done next, right? And but of course, if you want to specifically call it out, for example, I had never done a startup. I'd never worked in a startup. All of them were like very big companies that I've worked with. So what does it, what does it look like, you know? And so that was main thing. And I didn't know how one starts a business, starting from there, there are lots of things that I had to learn. We asked friends, I spoke to a couple of my CA friends. They told me, got connected with a company which does, it was companies in at that time. So we created this startup, almost like, let's do it now type of thing. And of course, it was about every camera at that time, what we were working on, costed 25 lakhs. And so it required real immediate money. And also, the work that we had started was started within a corporate, which means even though it's your own ideas belong to the company. The work belongs to the company. So I had to actually sort of get an agreement going with the company, make them agree to send it out to me. Mm-hmm. And all of these things. And I'm very, very thankful for my previous organization for letting me do this. Of course, there was an agreement and did have commercials, which means I had to raise funds for both of these purposes, for buying the cameras. But I told my team, I'm going to try finding funds for 3 months. You just come free 3 months. If I'm not able to pay your salary in 3 months, again, all of you, it's my job to find your job if you don't get it. So these are the kind of things, right? Trying to have a cushion in place and then taking the risk, and it's not just for me, but I was more worried about my team, right? They're young in the career and so on. So I don't want them to regret the decision. That's sort of, I was thinking like they're all helping me, mm-hmm. So that when you have that feeling, you just, I'm very thankful for them being with me so long. But so that's what was running in my mind. And thankfully, we found really good investors who wanted to kind of invest in this idea. One is idea, of course, is an important problem, that has to be solved. The idea is new. And they felt confident about the team that was going to sort of take on. Because I guess my number of years in corporate having delivered, and I'm sure, they did a lot of due diligence, spoke to all of my managers before and all. So, so all of that gave them a confidence that they can invest. And so that was a starting point. So we were also on the first day, no office, and all the four of us had to meet. Where do we keep them? We can't go to Starbucks all the time. So it was very interesting. We applied for some competitions, got some, we won the competition. This is first one was Tata Elxsi competition. So they asked me, what do you want? I said, give me a 5-seater, give me a place to sit so that, we can get this started. So it was very nice. We had a very good place. And of course, we bought our laptops and started off. So yeah, so starting from there, of course, now we have our own office space and close to 100 member team. So it's been a big journey.
Yes, you've come a long way since you started. But at any point of time, were you afraid of the uncertainties? And probably you from whatever you said now, you're not afraid of taking a risk because you're confident of yourself and confident in your skills and your team. But were you afraid of the change that you're going to bring about? Were you afraid of the uncertainties that would come along? What if it fails? What if it's not accepted by the community or the society? How did you manage the anxiety and the worry that comes with this fear?
There are two things, I guess, here. One is, I've always been in research. Research is full of uncertainties. You take the risk and move forward. But here, the same thing, right? Typically, whenever I'm faced with an unknown or an uncertainty, I look at the dumbest way of solving it, really dumbest way, the naive way of solving it. And then I get confident that, we can take this direction. Of course, the idea is to make the solution much better than the naive way. But if I can see a naive way of doing it, move in that direction. So it's more, again, a risk mitigation tactic, I would say, in all respects, in technical respect as well. But what was more important here is if somebody else is going to take the test here, definitely we are here to save lives from breast cancer. We don't want to have any wrong impact. I think that was very different. And so it was very cautious kind of decisions that we were taking. So every time it was like, you know, if I were on the other side, would I take the test? And what did I, for example, putting myself in the shoes of the end user, right? You know, saying, what would make me take the test? You know, basically, we shouldn't do anything wrong to the end user or women who will take the test was primary non-negotiable in the company. It was very well known. Even now, you know, whatever decision we take, we 100% make sure it will not wrongly impact the end user who is doing the test. You know, even if it means getting 10 times more money, whatever, that is not is the decision or the line. Everybody in the company knows that. So the same principle from the beginning we approached. Then, of course, I'm very thankful to have met Dr. Ram Prakash, sir, who is my mentor as well, who is a thermographer as well as a radiologist and very senior person, HOD of radiology of Wiley Hospital, you know. And he was very passionate about thermal imaging. He had in almost 10 years done only 300 women, right? You know, it's like he was doing this for passion, but visually trying to guess whether there is cancer or not and things like that. And of course, validating it with other modalities like ultrasound and so on. So, you know, that relationship really helped, you know, the partnership really helped. I learned a lot about particularly oncology, breast cancer, thermal imaging and all from him. And of course, Google has been, you know, web has been great to actually find things. And then I attended conferences and so on. Then he kind of, you know, we showed him all the results and he got the confidence about our tool. And I told him, sir, we're going to give you the tool. You use it. You can just look at this course, but you can, because he knows how to do the thermal imaging, you can give your impression from your own, right? You know, you may not even agree with the tool, but you can give your own. So once he agreed, then that is when we actually went to market first, you know. So it's more like a shortcut to go to market or time, you know, reducing the time to market. But the key thing is that we have an experienced doctor who is looking at what the tool is giving before giving it to the end user, right? So this made a huge difference in us getting started within a year to provide this to the end users. You know, of course, we had to build the product, everything. And so again, we partner with Karnataka Cancer Society, who are doing a lot of social service in rural areas. The good part or the bad part, whichever way you want to think it, is that hand examination is the standard and was the standard at that point in time. So I was very clear that we will do better than hand examination. And if need be, I said, like, let's do hand examination. And also this, somebody is found to, you know, symptomatic, let us bring her also into the hospital. If somebody is found to be positive in ours, we bring them also. So initial camps we ran like that. And then we figured out that we were doing definitely much better than hand examination. And so we started off with camps, outside camps to start with. And afterwards, we did clinical studies in a blinded prospective manner, not to, you know, kind of, you know, like every person who's coming for a mammogram would take our test and then go and do a mammo ultrasound and biopsy if positive. And then in a very blinded fashion, you compare the two results, that is biopsy results and our result. There's doctor involved in the standard of care, but in ours, there's no doctor involved. So this is the kind of, you know, comparison we did, evaluated the sensitivity, specificity, as we call it, and improving it. If, you know, I think first time itself when we did this, we got 85%, 88% sensitivity and specificity, which was pretty good for a first round of, you know, blinded the prospective clips. And this was also on symptomatic women, like, which was a diagnostic modality rather than a screening modality. So getting encouraged from that kind of result, we went on, and it was a third party controlled and also there's absolutely no issue. As a scientist and researchers generally, like, we have taken an oath that we will not do anything that is not not towards science, not towards integrity. You know, it's not just for that. Obviously, all of us want to be on that path, but that gives us some additional, I won't call it constraints, I was going to say that, but limits within which you can get those things, right? So anyway, so that's been the initial part of the journey.
Yeah. I was going to ask you another question about your success formula, your secret success formula, because there's a statistic that says that 70% of any kind of change that one wants to make, 70% of the times it results in a failure. People fail to achieve their goals. But I think with your conviction, confidence, and more than that, your methodical and scientific way of approach has kind of helped you in achieving the success that you have achieved. I also read that Nirama is the only Indian company that has acquired an approval from the US and UK and also Europe, I think, to use your breast cancer screening product. And it also seems that wherever you go, success follows.
Okay.
Have you faced failures? How do you handle them?
Oh, definitely. Faced many, many failures. Having said that, I think you mentioned about, you know, making a change is difficult, right? And that is true. For that, first of all, we have to be ready to change as well. I think that's very, very important. You know, I think I myself sort of reinvented myself, I would say, over the years as well, right? Trying to, of course, you know, when even a small thing went away, which, you know, went wrong, if I want to call it, which is basically, it's not the way I thought it should be done, right? It's not the way that I thought should be the result. Then obviously, you know, all of us feel bad about it, right? You know, and of course, I used to have several days initially of like, you know, even in my research days, it was very difficult to take failure. I used to cry a lot and, alone and so on and so forth, right? So, but what I realized is that there's many times two, three principles, you know, I would say, not principles, just to sort of, you know, keep cool and take this failure as a not a deterrent for where you want to go, is to believe, or my belief is everything happens for good. You know, I believe in like something bigger than myself, bigger than people and things like that. So everything happens for good, you know, whatever it is, you know, you really at that point in time, you feel it is, it's gone. Like, you know, it should not have, I mean, you've put in so much of hard work, but still, like, you know, you didn't make it, this didn't happen. Why are they being unfair? You know, why can't they see it? You want to blame everybody, but I just say, no, whatever happened is for good. Let's learn from here and try and, of course, not give it chance to chance, right? You know, let's try to sort of fix it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also, when people give feedback, of course, you know, it's not easy to take something that we built. I am not a doctor. My doctor degree is only from PhD, right? So from computer science also, not medical science. So when I go to a doctor, a medical doctor, and say, here is a test that can detect cancer. And they say, I've never read about this in my tons of books I read. Nobody else is doing it. You know, why should it work? Why should I believe? So the thing is, obviously, they'll say, no way I'm allowing you to try this on my patient. Okay, I can come back, but I would only say, okay, see, I don't know anything. You tell me, what does it take for you to say yes? What are those things? If we achieve and come back, you will say yes. And so it's really about understanding how to build that trust. And these were like, go show it on some statistically significant samples that you are doing better than Mammo. It could be something very concrete, or I don't know, if somebody else says, yes, I will do. On policy, it could be really unachievable also. But trying to look at what is that will change and understand from them, and then going back. And so that was pretty much in one of the first 2 years, it was pretty much that case, right? You know, making note of, what is that this person is saying? And typically, you know, one or two people say the same thing, then it definitely is worth looking at. Or maybe two people say the same thing, it's worth looking at. So that sort of thing. And it's also many times how you put it, right? You know, many times, you know, it's important not to make the opposite side person feel lower than you or low. I mean, like, we're not trying to do that, but, you know, they never should feel, even if I'm saying this is not good, that's not, that's why I'm coming up with it. Though it is very much true that mammography is only going to detect 50 to 60% of dense breast cancer in dense breast women, even that stating of a fact which is published in front of a radiologist is difficult, because they suddenly say, oh, what are you saying? No, you're doubting my... No, there are publications which are saying this, right? So it's really about how, you know, it's really a skill. I don't know whether I've got it. I still have a bunch of radiologists who are very angry with me for some reason. I don't know. But here is sort of, you know, the fact, and here are the papers. So going back with proofs and scientific thing has only been my approach, right? You know, so, but still, if somebody is sort of not convinced, we go back and say, what else do you need to convince? Or you can just decide that these are the people who are not going to move immediately anyway. So go to another person who's equally qualified to do it. So identifying paths of, you know, collaboration and partnership. So these things are, as you said, you know, a lot of soft skills. But everything will come if you believe in the idea and believe in the impact that idea can do. So it's really not about Geeta saying, and that what she said is right. It's really about what is right to be done. And whoever says it, it's not the main thing. So, I mean, I don't know whether I made any sense, but this is all is going on. You just have to, entrepreneurship is an ego crush. No ego. Though you say CEO, then these are all, you know, just letters next to your name. But really, it's you just have to keep the ego aside, be very open, and learn one thing every day. Like, you know, yeah. Learn from it and then move on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you're highly qualified, and you've been a achiever all through your life with more than 15 patents from the US and still counting. Do you think you're a very successful woman? And how do you define your success?
Very good question, actually. So, I don't know. I don't think I'm any successful. I think people do tag. And I was very, very surprised once to find a Wikipedia in my name and said, wow, what is this? Oh, this is a successful lady. I'm so sorry. That's when I realized, oh, maybe there's something I'm doing that is, you know, worth noticing for people. Honestly, if you ask me that way. Having said that, you know, I think if you're going into my beliefs, you know, I generally believe that like non-doership, you know, what I mean is you're here and this whole world is a stage where things are happening.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I mean. Yeah,
great. How do you take care of yourself? The kind of importance that you give to self-care and maintaining your mental health?
Oh, yeah. That's so important. So first and foremost, you'll have to figure out what makes you feel sad. So, because you have to be in a positive mindset, and what are those sort of negative things? You know, it's really, of course, you know, when somebody says, you know, you applied for a grant and, oh my God, you know, NHS grant twice, we've got failure, but I'm sure we'll make it next time, right? And because a lot of people have. So some of these things happen. You said you give 100% still. So that gives you. So then the mentality of how do we take such results, you know, these are the kind of things, you know, like I was saying, right, you know, whatever happens is for good. So trying to look at every failure as in a positive and a stable mindset, that's one thing, then it will not stress you also. And more importantly, specific activities. I do yoga at least for 15, 20 minutes every day. This is pranayam, the breathing exercises. That definitely helps me. Definitely. Because I can see if I miss it one day, then I know this is a different Geeta who's like fully gone. So I really can see how it impacts the way I I'm able to perceive things around me, the efficiency in which I can myself do the work and so on. Definitely, I see the difference. Thanks to Art of Living, definitely I follow. I'm a strong follower of their techniques, though I don't give back much, I guess, at least still now. And so along with these yoga techniques, they also teach you like five principles, you know, don't be a football of others' opinion. I think that's so important that people keep saying, you know, let them say, I mean, you're doing what is what you think is right. And as long as I'm not doing anything wrong to anybody, why should somebody somebody's words matter to you, right? You know, these are the kind of things. You know, I believe like everything is in us. You know, it's easy to blame others, you know, but you can't do anything about it. So do what you can do about it is you, and change you yourself, change your thinking. So it's you. If you have to be happy, if you have to be less stressful, it's yourself. You have to work on yourself. That's it. You can't work on somebody else. You know, even if maybe your husband, daughter, son, of course, you will tell them. Of course, they're all wonderful people. But you can only work on yourself. So that's what I feel like. I am under control or I am under no control. But it's me. And we just have to. Happiness is within you.
I mean, you seem to be on a path of equanimity and thinking on a stable footing. How do you celebrate success and what makes you happy?
I'm super thrilled, obviously, you know, people will definitely know. It's not like I'll be always like a Rishi or no. People will know when I'm sad. People will know when I'm very happy also, especially my team knows. So we really celebrate in terms of coming together. Of course, thanking everyone. You know, who contributed to it. We do it all the time. Like every mini success also we celebrate, because it's an incentive and encouragement for people who contributed, right? So we do that all the time. Our WhatsApp groups are like super good. We only have like positive notes. Of course, there are all kinds of messages, but this is instant gratification, you know, as we say, right? You know, that's very, very important to keep the team motivated, keep going in this direction. But definitely celebrate also with team lunches, and we have annual awards and so on, where we also, you know, do the rewards and recognition to team. And once you achieve one, and then next step appears, you know. So it just says, okay, this is done. What's the next one? So we can't just sort of be in the celebrity mode all the time, celebration mode, sorry. But it's a momentous, at least a day's celebration, and move on for the next activity.
Great. It's been wonderful talking to you, Rita, trying to understand what you do. And I could feel the passion with which you are doing this, and the impact that you're creating is just amazing. I'm so grateful once again for doing the work that you're doing, and also thankful and grateful for being on our show. Thanks, Rita. Have a wonderful evening.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Maltiji, for providing me an opportunity to talk about our work and some of the thoughts and history and all of that. I'm very thankful for providing me this platform. And whoever is listening, you know, I would just say one thing, you know, I think if I can do it, you can do it. So, so if you feel passionate about a particular thought, solving of a problem or any direction, put your 100% and, things will morph itself to become what people may call a success. But on this journey, you've learned so much that itself is a success, I guess.
Great closing words, Geeta. Thank you so much for that bonus. Thank you. Lovely evening. Bye-bye.
We'll see. Bye-bye. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thank you so much for listening in. I hope you liked this conversation and found it inspiring. If you think this could help transform minds, please feel free to share this podcast widely in your networks. You can listen to the Impressive Empress podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, Podbean, Stitcher, TuneIn, JioSaavn, at Player FM. Got a question that you want me to ask our next guest? Do write to me at empress at bhogya.online, empress at bhogya.online. That's it for now. Bye until the next time and take care.